Some of you remember we learned that song when a Life Action Ministry team was here with us a number of years ago, quite a few years ago now. And that was an important time in my life. Time of putting off complaining, putting off faithlessness, and having confidence that there was a God of this city and he needed to be followed, right? Even as a believer, there's just times for me, and I'm sure for you, where we drift from those absolutes. Not on purpose, we wouldn't write it, but we just kind of back down, and then so much is lost of the joy of what God would really have. And you know, today's passage, as we work through Daniel, and I'll have to tell you, I've really appreciated the feedback from the last number of Sundays, and how many of you are studying Daniel and reading it and thinking about it, and you'll be glad you did today because it just helps reinforce then, okay, what do I need to be thinking? And if you're families, you should be able to easily go home and take a story that really confronts us to say, are you going to walk with God or not? Take that home and circle the family and say, where are we at? Is this where we are? Matter of fact, in each of these messages, I've started with who is Daniel writing to? And I've been answering that in a kind of an ethnic or political sort of sense, because there is that sense to answering that question as Daniel writes not just to the Israelites, but to the whole world across time. Intentionally. It's one of the few books in the Bible that it's very obvious that's happening. But today I ask it, and I think there are two answers for this particular chapter. The two answers are, he's writing to those who are half listening. You say, really? Because one of the main characters in the story is only half listening. And certainly what took place in the story was for the benefit of this man. But he only half listened. He only took a half step toward what God really wanted. Which is a little bit like falling off the cliff. A half step doesn't work. It's either all in or forget it. And God in his loving plan has been drawing this man close, and he's taken a half step, and he even appears in some sense, and maybe actually in some senses, to worship God a little bit. But when you think about who God is, to worship a little bit is no worship at all. So he's writing to those who maybe have only taken a half step, who are only half listening. And you say, well, that might be me. I don't know if I want this message. Well, let this message land on you, okay? Let this chapter check you to see, am I a halfway listener? Have I only taken a half step in what it means to Christian walk? And let God work on that. So that's one of the groups he's writing to. I think the second group that he's writing to are to believers who are in the vice of the world's anger. Now, not all the world comes across completely angry, but there are times where the world can be quite angry against the truths of God. It is their normal direction. And so some of you may be in a very specific place like that, in your home or at work or in a friendship, where you know the other person is in opposition to what you believe. And matter of fact, they are cornering you with that opposition. It may be that you just went to family reunion and I just described it. You know, there are some of you that go to family reunion and your family is waiting for you to fail miserably. That's a horrible thing, but it happens. Where people are waiting for that. They're almost gunning for you that would happen. Let me tell you, this passage tells you how to stand correctly, not run and hide, not skip the reunion, but rather to live right where God has placed you. Go to Daniel 3, and I'll make just a very simple note here that Daniel 3 comes after Daniel 2. How am I doing so far in my logic this morning? Pretty good, all right? And so you want to catch the last little bit of Daniel 2 from 2 weeks ago, because it kind of sets it up where we have Daniel's God of gods, as Nebuchadnezzar would say, spontaneously being worshipped by Nebuchadnezzar. Nebuchadnezzar, if you remember in chapter 2, had a dream, and asked for the interpretation and the dream to be said. And no one ever asked for that. All the wise men, magicians, astrologers, demonic type force people can't answer it, because it's only something the gods could answer. That's what they say. And then Daniel, from the mouth of God, gives the dream and the interpretation. And Nebuchadnezzar's response is that he fell on his face. Can you picture Putin falling on his face in front of a Jewish person? I can't. I can't picture our president falling on his face in front of probably anybody. I mean, world rulers don't do that, especially if they have title like king, okay, and are in charge of pretty much the known world. They don't fall down in front of anybody. Today you're going to see Nebuchadnezzar make haste. He's going to run around like he's freaked out. Rulers with great power, they don't do these things until they come in front of the one who has ultimate power. And so Nebuchadnezzar, he falls on his face, and he actually tries to honor, somewhat worship Daniel. And Daniel, instead of correcting him, lets him finish. And the king answers and says in Daniel 2:47, he says, "Truly, your God is God of gods and Lord of kings." He said, "He's the sovereign over me. He's a revealer of mysteries, and I've just seen that." You know, you've just revealed this. So Nebuchadnezzar, did he worship God? Well, he took a half step. We know he took a half step because in the very next chapter, he makes the most massive idol to his God, probably on known record. Wait a minute. How does God of gods, honoring God of gods, then making Marduk 90 foot tall? God Marduk, how does that fit? Does that seem a little weird to you? Something wrong there, okay? Because there was only a half step. There's only half listening to what God's doing. One other thing that you'd put here is that Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, because Daniel revealed the dream, he got them a job. Now, I'm thinking in chapter 3, they're like, "Daniel, why did you get us this job? We would have liked to just been wise men and kind of off the scale." But instead, now they have ruling power, and the people who have to come worship this idol are all the satraps and the prefects and all these different titles of people who rule. So Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego got stuck in this crowd, forced to make a decision. Now, when I got this story by way of flannel graph, see, I was a little older than VeggieTales, okay? Some of you got these stories by VeggieTales, but I got them by flannel graph, okay? So when I got taught this story in Sunday school long, long ago, the teachers were always feeling a little embarrassed because they don't know where Daniel is. So did Daniel worship? What happened? What's going on? Where's Daniel? Well, chapter 2, the last verse tells us, Daniel remained where? At the king's court. See, if the king is off in the plain of Dura, well, someone has to stay at the throne room to answer questions. And Daniel's number 2. And so that's why the text tells us. He's not a ruler of a precinct or anything else. He stays in the king's court, like, all the time. And so he's back in the king's court as this drama unfolds. Matter of fact, I have this picture in my mind of Daniel because he's very powerful. He's number 2 in, you know, all of Babylon and its extended provinces. And so I'm picturing him sending messengers out to see what's going on. I think that actually probably happened, because he knows what's going to happen. He's privy to what has been written, what's going to be announced. You don't build a 90-foot tall statue like without anybody knowing, you know what I mean? Especially your number 2 guy. So he knows what's coming. Can you just imagine? He sends the courier out. "Tell me what happened." "Oh man, he's doing it. Oh no. Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, are they there?" "Yes, they're there." "Well, that's good. They'd be in trouble if they weren't. But ooh, this is a bad spot for them. They didn't bow. Matter of fact, well, you just listen to the story and find out what his couriers probably were telling him. And I'm thinking Daniel was praying for his friends, don't you? This seems to be the pattern in the book. So Daniel 3, I'm just going to walk down through the chapter, read it, make a few comments, and then maybe draw us to be more than half listeners and draw us ready when we're in the vice of the hardship of world. King Nebuchadnezzar, verse 1, made an image of gold whose height was 60 cubits. It's 90 feet tall, 9 stories roughly. Its breadth was 6 cubits. Now, if you're thinking about that, you say, that was a really skinny statue. Okay, 90 feet by 6. They actually, in the plains of Dura, which is where this happened, there's several places named Dura, but one of the places that is named that, they have actually found in their dig a giant foundation piece that is probably part of this 90-foot statue. So if you picture it correctly, you're probably picturing an enormous block structure of foundation that goes way up, and then the statue is up at the top of that. Still a very tall statue, but it's at the top so that it could be in proportion. And they've actually found the base of this that they believe is actually from this time frame. That makes sense, because if you have this enormous crowd and the statue, I mean, you wouldn't even see most of the statue because if its feet were on the ground. You know, you think about it, all the crowd and you're stuck in the crowd. So this put the statue up where it's above everything else. And so this statue, which was real, it really did happen, was made an image of gold. Probably overlaid, could be solid. There certainly was the wealth to make it solid in Nebuchadnezzar's time. And then in verse 2, then King Nebuchadnezzar sent to gather the satraps, the prefects, and the governors, the counselors, the treasurers, the justices, the magistrates, and all the officials of the provinces to come to the dedication of the image that King Nebuchadnezzar had set up. Then the satraps, the prefects, the governors, the counselors, you're going to see a lot of repetition in this chapter. He keeps talking about who's there and what kind of instruments were played. Why would Daniel put all that detail in? Because detail brings credibility. People have spent countless hours researching the labels of the people that were called together, and they have found them in inscriptions. There were really people of all these titles, and Daniel would know that. And he wrote them down in their Babylonian names, the title names, so that you realize, oh man, this Daniel was really there. Uh-huh, that's kind of the point. So all these people are gathered, every type of layer of leader. You picture the crowd, you might think all kinds of people were there, but it's the ruling class gathering, because then they're going to have to take home this kind of obedience. Remember, Nebuchadnezzar just saw a dream where a big old rock knocked the thing down and destroyed his kingdom. And so he's going, I need to clean house. And so he tried to kill all his wise men. Now he's putting all these people in front of him and making them swear allegiance to his God. Also, when I was taught this story, I had teachers tell me the statue was of Nebuchadnezzar. It does not say that. Matter of fact, he probably made it of Marduk. That's the best understanding. Made it of the god that he primarily worshipped in that day. So he sets up this image. All the people are gathered around it, and they stand before the image. So they're all gathered, wondering, why are we gathered? And then in verse 4, the herald says, this herald proclaims aloud, you are commanded, O peoples, nations, and languages. So officers from all the different hostages that have been brought and trained, they're all there. He says, when you hear the sound of the horn, pipe, lyre, trigon, harp, bagpipe, and every kind of music, you are to fall down and worship the golden image that King Nebuchadnezzar has set up. And whoever does not fall down and worship shall immediately be cast into a burning fiery furnace. So here we have the ironworks factory over to the side of the plain, and he says, that furnace where they smelt metals, you're going to get tossed in it if you do not worship. So that's kind of a fairly simple, straight-ahead choice, right? Hear music from any kind of instrument. I mean, can you imagine if we were there as a crowd? Someone's cell phone would have gone off and everybody went down. You know, you know what I mean? Because he lists it out. He says, I don't care what's played, what instrument's played near you, when the music happens, on your faces, okay? Or you go into the fiery furnace. Therefore, as soon as all the peoples heard the sound of the horn, pipe, lyre, trigon, harp, bagpipe, or horn, and every kind of music, all the peoples, nations, languages fell down and worshiped the golden image that King Nebuchadnezzar had set up. So like a sea of humanity just bowing down. Verse 8 says, therefore, you come to the accusation. It says, therefore, at that time, certain Chaldeans came forward and maliciously accused the Jews. This is weird because they were supposed to bow down. So what's malicious about saying, hey, those three didn't bow down? I think people, even though it's a very, very large gathering, they're going to stand out. So why would he label it malicious? Because they did it with hate in their heart. It wasn't just that they disobeyed. These people that bowed down didn't want to obey. They did their own thing, most of them. But they were waiting for those three. Remember, these were the three that got promoted. They got promoted ahead of them, faster than they should have. Plus, they're Jewish, which is kind of, to them, is low. And so they maliciously bring up the accusation. They declare to King Nebuchadnezzar, O king, live forever. Those always sound like false words, don't they? You, O king, have made a decree that every man who hears the sound of the horn, pipe, lyre, trigon, harp, bagpipe, and every kind of music shall fall down and worship the golden image. And whoever does not fall down and worship shall be cast into a burning fiery furnace. There are certain Jews who have you appointed over the affairs of the province, Babylon, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. These men, O king, pay no attention to you. Now, is that true? Well, they pay attention on a lot of things. They just did not obey this one. I mean, they've been ruling fairly for him, but they're totally being malicious. He said, they do not serve your gods. Is that true? That is true. They do not worship the golden image that you've set up. This is also true. With hate in their hearts, they say this. And Nebuchadnezzar, it says in verse 13, was in a furious rage. Now, the devious part of Pastor John really wants to go find a child somewhere near the front and say, what does your mama look like when she's in a furious rage? You know what I'm saying? Don't worry, dads. A little later on in the text, it says that the king was filled with fury. I'm going to ask the kids about that too, because it's even worse. No, so he is, think about it. We know what furious rage is, right? He's like, what? They disobeyed me? I mean, it's a man of power, a man who is used to respect, and now there's disobedience, bold-faced, and it happened in front of the whole crowd. He's mad. But he knows these guys. He's promoted them. He knows they're connect to Daniel. He knows they're connect to good things. And you see him, even though he's furious, there's a level at which he tries to protect them. Look at the paragraph. He commands that Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego be brought. So they brought these men before the king. Nebuchadnezzar answered and said to them, is this true? When a man is in rage, he rarely asks that question. So he's furious, and he commands for them to come. But there is a level of kindness. I mean, he actually tries to figure out if it's true. He does not believe. He knows these other guys lie all the time. And he knows these three have stood correctly to this point. And so is this true? That you do not serve my gods or worship the golden image that I've set up? And does Nebuchadnezzar know that already? Yeah. He saw it when they didn't eat the vegetables, right? He knows this about them. And so it's kind of like he's asking it because he has to, because he's been put on the spot in front of these people. He's looking at him, is it true you do this? Almost like, just answer so that we can get past this. He says, is this true? And they said, now if you're ready. So he moves right on. He doesn't even let him answer. He says, now if you're ready, because you might have missed it, we're going to play the music again. You bow down, the whole thing goes away. I mean, you can see his sensitivity here, because you're going to see when he doesn't have sensitivity in a minute. So he says, if you're ready, when you hear the sound of the music, all these instruments, every kind of music, fall down, worship the image of Main, well and good. Let me tell you, there's no well and good when you defy the king. If they had answered, yes, we did over there, even if it's accidental, you're dead, unless the king cares. And he does care toward them. He says, but if you do not worship, you shall immediately be cast in the burning fiery furnace. I don't have a choice. And then the statement that God intended to have made happens. I put it in big, bold print in mine. And he says, and who is the God who will deliver you out of my hands? This is Nebuchadnezzar drawing a line. He says, look, it's one thing that your buddy told the meaning of the dream, but what God can deliver you? When I have said fiery furnace is going to happen. There's no way out. He's trying to let them know, there's no weasel room here. I can't save you. You wonder, when did Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego get ready for this event? You know, you wonder, did Daniel tell them, look, there's going to be a thing out on the plains of Dura, and you're probably going to have to answer. And we need to think about how you're going to answer. Did they do that? He might have. Because God prepared for this event well over 150 years beforehand. Let me read for you in Isaiah 43, which these young men would have known. They probably rehearsed it with each other. On their way to captivity, because they were thinking. I mean, the most beautiful verse in the Bible, Isaiah 40 through 66, are written to the people of Israel that when they go into captivity, this is what's going to happen. This is how you'll be sustained. In Isaiah 43, 1 and 2, it says, "But now, thus says the Lord, he who created you, O Jacob, he who formed you, O Israel, fear not, for I have redeemed you. I've called you by name. You are mine." He takes them all the way back, Isaiah is, and he's quoting from earlier, and he's bringing it to the captives, someone like Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. And he says, "Remember, I called you as a people, and you are mine." They're part of his family. He has responsibility for them. He says, "When you pass through the waters, I'll be with you." Had that happened? What do you call that? Red Sea, right? "And through the rivers." When did the nation go through the river? They went over the Jordan, right? Right through the Jordan on dry ground. And so he's given them two big events. He says, "Remember when you came out of Egypt as slaves? I did that, called you by name. Remember when you went in, crossed the Jordan, and you took the whole land of Canaan by my name?" And his third thing in the event is, "When you walk through the fire, you will not be burned, and flame shall not consume you." See if they believe that when we come back to verse 16 in Daniel. He says, "Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego answered and said to the king, 'O Nebuchadnezzar, we have no need to answer you in this matter.'" Wait a minute, what matter? Well, the matter of do we worship your gods? Do we serve your gods, and do we worship the idol? You know we don't have to answer you, they said. Matter of fact, they're basically saying, "Don't even play the music again." And they don't, by the way. Nebuchadnezzar never plays the music and tries again. Because they just look at him and said, "We don't have to answer you in this. You know that already. You know where we stand." He said, "If this be so," in other words, if you really are going to toss us into the fiery furnace, "our God who we serve is," instead of their God, his gods, he said, "our God who we serve is able to deliver us from the burning fiery furnace, and he will deliver us out of your hand, O king." So they're saying, look, he could deliver us in a fiery furnace. If you choose something else right this moment, he will. Did you hear? They didn't say he might. He said he will deliver us. They didn't know what that was going to look like. They had no idea. Isaiah didn't say how. He just said, will happen. And they claim that. And when I've been taught this, the next verses so often were kind of like Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego saying, "And if we burn up, you know, we won't worship you." But that's not what it's saying. He says, they go back to the same idea. "But if not," in other words, "if you don't throw us into the fiery furnace, be it known to you, O king, that we will not serve your gods or worship the golden image that you've set up." So, I mean, they have drawn a line that is uncrossable. They said, "Understand, you throw us in a fiery furnace, God's going to take care of us. If you don't, somehow you don't know this, we're not serving your gods. Ever. And we're not worshiping this image." I mean, can you imagine when Daniel got the courier back? They told him, nada. Oh, he's like, oh boy, there's no way out of this one. Right? And he knew that because he knew what Nebuchadnezzar was like. Because look at Nebuchadnezzar's response in verse 19. "Then Nebuchadnezzar was filled with fury, and the expression of his face was changed." Kids, what does your dad look like when that happens? You know, where he's trying to guide you along and all is good, and then you cross that. There is a line somewhere, right? You cross that line and dad's face changes. Compassion melts out of it, and correction fills it up. And usually dad does wrong right about there. And so did Nebuchadnezzar. He got murderous because hate. When love leaves, hate comes. And hate leads to death. And he murders, not Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. He attempted that. But he murdered his best soldiers because he was filled with anger. Now, this lesson is not about anger. It's not what the chapter is primarily there for. But it does teach us something, doesn't it? He gets so filled with fury that he says, "Fire that baby up," because they're out in the plain worshiping. They're not doing metal work that day. He's like, "Turn it up. And I want it turned up now." And so they dump the fuel into this furnace, and they fire it up 7 times more than it was usually heated. Somehow that quantity is measured. I don't know if it's in hotness or how much or large the blaze is. The bottom line is it was so intense when they fired it up. He orders these mighty men of his army to bind Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. So they tie them up so they can't fight, and they cast them into the burning fiery furnace. So they kind of throw them over into this pit is probably the picture. You know, because when I was growing up, I was always picturing the little blue flame in my furnace. I'm like, how did they get them in there? You know what I mean? So this is like a big pit where they're smelting metal, you know. So they throw them over the edge into this fiery area. And the men who threw them in, these men were killed. These men were bound that they were thrown in, and they were thrown into the fiery furnace. Because the king's order was so urgent and the furnace overheated, the flame of the fire killed those men who took up Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. And these three men, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, fell bound into the burning fiery furnace. So the crowd has left the statue and gone to the furnace. The rulers, and they watch these soldiers be killed, and they watch the bound men go over the wall into the furnace. They can see them somehow, however it's set up. And the king, you get this picture, like he threw him in, and he's whatever he's carried around, his little throne, he kind of sits down. He's like, oh, that's done. Because you know how it is, filled with fury. Took care of that. And he's just sitting there. And then he's like, and he's running around. He's looking at all those guys, and they don't know what to do because they're like, if I say the wrong thing, boop, into the furnace, right? And they're looking at the furnace like, I mean, have you ever seen anybody stand in fire? No problem. I haven't, okay? You say, yeah, with some big suit. Yeah, well, they smell like fire when they're done, you know? And this was no suit. Matter of fact, it described that they had everything down to their underwear on when they tied them up, okay? Nothing fancy. The passage even says it that way, so you know. They showed up for this meeting, tied up, thrown in. They even talk about they had their hats, threw them in. He's astonished. He rises up in haste. He declares to his counselors, didn't we send 3 people in the fire? I always think this is funny. Nebuchadnezzar, they're not burning up. This would be astounding in of itself. He doesn't even mention this. He's like, there's 4. Because that's what happens when the Son of God shows up. What is absolutely stunning, miraculous, is small potatoes. Because he's like, the answer said to the king, true king, we only threw 3. He answered and he said, but I see 4 men unbound walking in the midst of the fire, and they're not hurt, and the appearance of the 4th is like the Son of the gods. Then Nebuchadnezzar came near to the door of the burning fiery furnace. He declared, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, servants of the Most High God, come out and come here. He took a half step. Wouldn't you want to meet the 4th guy? Who is that? Why would he only call for Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego? I mean, certainly them. But it's like, does he not want to acknowledge that he really, truly saw the 4th? I mean, as a believer, if God showed up, wouldn't you want to sit at his feet? A partial step. Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, well, look what he says. He says, come out. But he says, servants. He knew they didn't serve his gods. Servants of the Most High God. He knew that already from his earlier meeting with Daniel. See, he knew who they worshipped. That's why they said, we have no need to answer. They are servants of the Most High God. He not only reveals dreams, but apparently he has power over fire and over kings. And the satraps, the prefects, the governors, the king's counselors gathered together and saw that the fire had not any power over the bodies of those men. The hair of their heads was not singed. Their cloaks were not harmed. No smell of fire had come upon them. Again, this is a little bit of imagination, but I can just imagine when the courier gets back to Daniel. Because Daniel has to be composed all the time. He's in the king's court in front of Nebuchadnezzar. You cannot act up in any way. But Nebuchadnezzar, he's out on the plain. Can you imagine that courier comes back? Daniel's like, yes, right? I mean, he gets to act up just a little bit. Just say, uh-huh, Isaiah. I just never knew it was going to come out like that. He gets to be excited. The worship response of Nebuchadnezzar, a half step, he says, blessed be the God of Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, who has sent his angel and delivered his servants who trusted in him and set aside the king's command. He said, I know they trust him because they ignored me. And yielded up their bodies rather than serve and worship any god except their own God. So he's got great respect that they believe what they believe, but he claims it as their God, not his God. He never fully worships. He just takes this most high God and moves him up the pyramid of gods that he believes. He says, he's the highest, and you ought to have respect. Matter of fact, if I make a decree, if anybody doesn't respect this God, we're going to pull him limb from limb. Well, that's pretty serious, except that, you know, like, does he really need you? Because he keeps them from being burned. He tells dreams when he wants. I don't think this God needs you, Nebuchadnezzar, pulling people in half. But for Nebuchadnezzar to make his life make sense to himself, he adds this most high God to his group of gods, which is only partial worship, not full. And the king promoted Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. So, in closing, I give you a couple of thoughts. To those who are half listening, who are making only a half step toward God, and you say, you haven't talked about what things I'm not obeying. I don't need to. See, like Nebuchadnezzar, God's already worked in you. Matter of fact, he's so kind, he put you here today and had you think about him a little bit more. And he's already brought truth to you that you've pushed off if you were acknowledging that you're halfway toward him. You may say, well, I believed in Jesus. I've trusted him for salvation. Is your life like Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, where you've drawn a line and said, I will not worship your gods. I will not be like the world around me when it violates who my God is. To those who are half listening, I just tell you, he's chased you again today. Will you trust him, his way, his deliverance? As Nebuchadnezzar said, will you yield up your body to him? You know, Romans says the same thing that Nebuchadnezzar did. He understands that real worship is to give who you are totally. Isn't that ironic? He saw it from them, but he personally didn't do it. So many times in America, we worship a shelf full of gods. We do. Now, we don't have little images that are carved. But we have all these things that matter so highly to us that we sin in our pursuit of them by way of anger, by way of waste, by way of all sorts of things. I'm not going to bore you with those details. But we worship them. They rule us. And we let that be our rule. And we call ourselves Christian at the same time. Nebuchadnezzar could be described exactly the same way. He said more out loud to a crowd than most Christians have ever said to a crowd around them about their God. And yet he still wasn't a real worshiper. Many people will say, Lord, Lord, and not enter into God's kingdom. You say, well, how do I know? Go search that. Do business with God right now. I can't do that for you. Ask him, am I all in? When you're asking, I mean, he'll prompt what needs to change. I trust him that way. He made it clear. To those who are half listening, he's chased you today. I'd surrender. To the believers who are in the vice of the world's anger, you know, you're just caught in a hard spot. Or maybe you're about to be. You say, well, how do I know that? Because Peter says it's going to happen. Okay? So you're going to have times of that. So young people, I'll just tell you, prepare ahead of time for those pinch points. You know what kind of stuff God has commanded for your life. For instance, that, you know, our finances and our time, our life is to be devoted to him. And it shows up in those means. Well, you know that. So prepare now. I remember when my sister went to do CEF training, and I was an eighth grader. And I was working for a farmer, and I thought, my stuff can't be my stuff. And I know I need to tithe. And so I would do that. But I'm like, this is the first money I'd ever really made. I thought, boy, it's God's money. I should support my sister. I mean, what am I going to do with 90% of my money? I don't have any now, so 90% seems like a lot. And so I gave another 10% as an eighth grader. Whatever I made that summer, and I didn't know what it would be. That's what I'm talking about. To take a point where there's going to be a pinch point. Now I have money, now I'm in control of it, and I rule. That's how we approach money, isn't it? We don't say, God, what do you want? We're Americans. How far can I get? What can I own, right? It's not like, God, how do I fit into your plan with my time, with my money, with my mind, with my talents? And as an eighth grader, I had to begin to make those decisions. That pinch point will be with you your whole life. Unless you're really poor, and then you should just thank God he took that off the table, right? And you don't have to worry about that. Think about an ultimatum, an accusation, a pinch point that can come your way. And this becomes a great assignment. Some of you are in that pinch point. Am I going to obey God with kindness in my home or am I not? What's it going to be? What would serving or worshiping a false god look like? Sometimes it's good to define it by the negative. In the world you live in, young people, I'm telling you, everybody lives together before they're married now. It's just true. Except it's not true. Because there are devoted Christians who say no. And we have to decide ahead of time. What would false god worship look like? Go do my own thing and have the pleasure of the world for a moment. And stress the rest of my relationships, the rest of my life. That? Or obey God. And have the joy of his simple, pure walk. What's it going to be? What would serving a false god look like? Think about your pinch point. And, you know, these, Daniel and his friends, they didn't run away from the world. Serving in the next question, what would trusting God look like? Trusting, what does it look like, doesn't mean go live in a room and don't touch anybody that might have done something wrong in their life. No, no, no. They lived right in the middle of it. Matter of fact, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, they got promoted. They didn't turn around and say, rip Nebuchadnezzar limb from limb because he obviously doesn't love our God. They didn't do that. They walked their way through the labyrinth of difficult living in a pagan world. But they were clear. What would trusting God look like? And they did lots of things they didn't like, but they had a line they wouldn't cross, didn't they? Because there are lines we cannot cross. You may have to do other things that are uncomfortable, that aren't sin. But there are certain things. We cannot sin. We can't do that. And then in the middle of all that, when you're thinking this, how has God blessed you? I'll tell you one way he blessed you. He gave you Daniel chapter 3, didn't he? And let me tell you what they thought. They thought, yes, God gave us Isaiah, or we might not have known how to walk in the fire. Lord, I pray that we'd be people that ponder. I'm not sure this is the kind of message that has immediate response, but it should have beginning response. May we follow you, seek you, ponder and clarify in our minds what it is to worship you right where you place us, all in our unique situations. Give us the wisdom from your word like the three men had. May we seek your word so it's at the ready when we find ourselves at these pinch points. May we encourage that. Lord, may we not take a half step. May we be sold out to you. May you have our whole life because that's what you've asked for and it's certainly what you deserve. In Jesus' name, amen.